I'm particularly interested in what Art has done with regard to his recent trip to Eastern Europe, looking at the communities there, the Jewish communities, and so forth. So, Art, I'm really looking forward to seeing what it is that you're looking at in the kind of post-warfare societies in the areas that you visited.
I'm interested in what we take away by way of lessons from harsh experience.
Mm-hmm.
So when we traveled in Croatia and Bosnia and Herzegovina, we went out of our way to talk to people who had been under fire, had been, you know, besieged.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked them in as artful a way as we could contrive, what good can we take from adversity? What can we learn? How can we grow? What can our children take away in the way of an educational lesson from all of this? That's the tack we take.
Right. And is there any sense that people from opposing camps, you know, in the Serbian, Croatian, Muslim communities, find that there is some form of common ability to sit down and have dialogue?
Considerable. That's one of the brighter notes that was struck over the time we spent there. There's great, almost as we have found on trips to Israel, a great weariness of a great sense of fatigue, a great sense of let's not go back to war. We've had more than our fill of it, and a considerable sense of what, if you will, Obama talked about, namely the gains that are possible in talking with the other, talking with the alleged enemy, a great desire for reconciling differences in ways that don't involve grievously hurting one another.
And did you find that there was any specific area of identity that brought them closer? Was it a sense of trying to bring their religious values, their understanding of national values, human values? What was the overriding thing that makes these people say, besides suffering, we don't want to go through this again?
That's a good point, a good question you raise. We found with articulate thinking people who had processed what they had been through or seemed to have processed, we found a desire to stay on a higher plane of existence, to extend the hand of friendship before clasping the hand as a fist. So there is an interest in humane or humanistic ways of being that has come in the aftermath of such, you know, grievous harm.
So, Bruce?
All right. Well, I ended up with the microphone. I try to understand, just in my mind, how we perpetuate these things through time. That, you know, we talk about, well, the Shiites hate the Sunnis because of something that happened thousands of years ago, or hundreds of years ago. How do we short-circuit that? How do we make that stop and look at it from a different perspective without continually perpetuating the myths and the memories?
One tact might be to help youngsters in particular focus more on choices for future making, for shaping tomorrow, and essentially dim some of the interest that adults pay in the past. It's adults who harbor grievances, not children. Children are taught grievances, taught to hate.
Hello, my name is Bree, and I'm from Germany, and I'm interested in how alive do you find the Jewish communities in Eastern Europe? How do they live day to day? How strong are the communities? How alive is kind of their spirit there?
Yes, that's wonderful. There are segments. There's the segment that's very much into culture, as with the Krakow annual festival that runs for a week that celebrates klezmer music and art of a Hasidic type. That's very vibrant and brings many, many tourists and actually helps support the Krakow economy for a year, that 1 week celebration. Then there is the secular component of European Jewry that is very big on intermarriage and on downplaying historic Judaism and on emphasizing modernity and how sophisticated they can be, much reminiscent of German Jewry in the 1920s and 1930s. And then there are the Lubavitch, the new Orthodox, the smallest but fastest growing segment of European Jewry, and they're busy asserting with their traditional dress and their traditional ways, the Judaism of yesteryear, and they do it with pride, esteem, and even a smile button.
Art, it's very interesting that you mention klezmer. Sitting right next to Bree is a old and valued friend of mine, Nancy Hoffman, who is one of the best klezmer musicians and certainly one of the best klezmer singers. She has the voice and tenor and feel of the old world.
Thank you. Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Nancy. What I'm really intrigued by the idea of the young people needing to be the ones that draw us out of that mindset of anger and hatred from the past. And here in Maine, we have the Seeds of Peace Camp, where they bring young people from warring countries or countries that have those hatreds, Israel, Palestine, Pakistan, India, and they create dialogue in 3 weeks, which is really transformational. And the question I guess I have is, how do we continue to urge nations, groups of people to instigate that type of dialogue or the ability for young people to face each other one-on-one and get through, do that processing that was also mentioned, that so we can get into the next phase?
I think of two resources. One, the group called Social Entrepreneurs, which is the new jargon for newly rich men and women who are looking to micromanage their philanthropy. If we could identify more of them, and their numbers are large here in the United States, and interest them in becoming the sponsors of summer programs to extend the reach, to get a larger and larger percentage of youngsters into this kind of experience, that would be a gain. Similarly, if we could get state boards of education to mandate that schools in Maine and elsewhere in Florida, all across the country, 16,000 school districts, have a requirement that 1 to 5% of the youngsters in the student body be from overseas, be sponsored, be put up in the homes of parents in America who appreciate how important it is that youngsters from the Middle East and elsewhere experience the American social scene and the American school system. Both those techniques, social entrepreneurs and requirements of school districts harboring a small percent of overseas youngsters, would forward this campaign.
My name's Megan Voller. I write for Creative Loafing down in Tampa. I'm curious about Holocaust museums in every state of the U.S., Is that a place where people who have, I'm thinking of young American kids who are maybe shortchanged in terms of their history education in public schools, is that a venue where they can learn about the Holocaust and make connections to ongoing genocides around the world?
They can definitely make those connections, since the Holocaust education industry, in quotation marks, has taken that turn several years ago. I, however, in a certain way, you've pushed a button of mine. I have a big argument with Holocaust educators. I think that where children passing through their museums are concerned, I think that for over 60 years, we have miseducated children. We have exposed them entirely to the horror and not to the help. We have focused on what was done to the prisoners and not what was done by the prisoners. The prisoners created a sociology inside the camps, which included much more mutual caring, mutual support, much more love, much more affection than any child would learn from any Holocaust museum in this country or overseas. And that is shameful, regrettable, and cannot be improved upon soon enough.